And I really believed that we needed to be looking together this morning at Jesus walking on the water and Peter walking on the water in chapter 14. And of course, that has absolutely nothing to do with mission. It results in mission, but the actual walking on the water has nothing to do with it. It's almost like, and I think this is, you could walk out after I've said this really, because this is all I'm going to say all morning. This story is like a megaphone into the heart of us who are believers, saying, fix your eyes on Jesus in the storm. There are three things that I think the story wants to help us consider. Number one, let's row this boat together. Number two, keep our eyes focused on Jesus. Now that's second, not because I don't think it's the most important, but because in the way the story maps out, Jesus, and we'll talk about this in a minute, tells the disciples to go together first. And then Peter has to keep his eyes focused on Jesus when he steps out of the boat. I really think it's in the middle deliberately on Matthew's part here. It's a little bit like the jam in a Victoria sponge. Your ham and your ham sandwich, it is the thing that glues it all together. And then thirdly, nicking completely the title of John Ortberg's book, which I have never read. Sorry. If you want to walk on the water, you've got to get out of the boat. But before we get into those three, I want us to look at the story as a whole, from the very beginning to the very end, because I think there's a key nugget in doing that to start. So if you go back a little, just before the walking on the water, Jesus has just performed like a culinary mastermind of a miracle. He has fed 5,000 people with essentially a little boy's lunchbox. Now again, much like all of us, I've been in church all my life, so I've heard this story a billion times. And sometimes we might need to be reminded of what 5,000 people actually looks like. So I Google a picture of 5,000 people. And this is a picture of 5,000 people in a little town just outside New York. Jesus fed more than 5,000 people. It was a phenomenal thing. But what's really interesting is how Matthew writes this. The 5,000 have just been fed, and then you go straight into verse 22 in chapter 14, and it reads, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into a boat, go on ahead of him to the other side, whilst he dismissed the crowd. Now let's just pause for a moment there, okay? There's no, wow, we've just fed 5,000 people with a lunchbox. Let's pray for these people. Let's minister to them. Let's bring a few of them to faith. There's none of that. It's right. This is how it reads. So this is how many Jesus fed. And immediately Jesus gets rid of the crowd. See, guys, you've been fed. That's you done with. Boys, disciples, I'm Welsh. Boys. Get on that boat together and get into that middle of that lake, and I'll meet you on the other side. Jesus, as we know, goes up a mountain to pray. Storm hits. Jesus walks on water. Peter walks on water, sinks. Jesus catches him. Storm stops, and they end up on the other side. Where they end up is significant. They get on together. Off they go on this boat. Where they end up is a place called Gennesaret. Now, I had noticed this before I was preparing, okay? But for a few chapters beforehand, we're not given any geographical definition of where anything's really happening, okay? If you're theological, you probably will know instantly, right? But I'm not that clever. I needed to be told. Gennesaret is where they end up. Gennesaret was right by the Lake of Galilee and was called the Paradise of Galilee. Why? Because of its fertility and its beauty. I think Matthew, if you look at the picture as a whole, does these two things deliberately. He's saying these boys are probably, after the 5,000 have been fed, thinking, what the heck is going on? They've probably been shattered because they have been there the whole day with the feeding of the 5,000. Some of them are wondering, what the heck is going on? Who is this Jesus? Others of them are going, oh, where are we going next? And Jesus says, go together on this boat. Off you go into the lake. I like to think that because most of them were fishermen, being on that boat would have been a place of comfort and rest and peace. So essentially Jesus is giving them a bit of a break, a bit of a breather. But then a storm hits. And if I'd have been them, probably because I am so sinful, I really am, I'd have gone, oh man alive, Lord, catch us a break. But what is to come? After the storm across the lake is Gennesaret, a place of beauty, a place of life, a place of hope. You see, I think ultimately the overarching nugget, if you look at the story as a whole, is that we might be feeling buffeted by life. I think most of us do lots of the time, and it could be anything. Health, family, jobs. It could be even at the moment, as a church, we are in an uncertain time. We may be unnerved, unsure of what's going next. And we're emotionally, physically out of our depth. But in this story as a whole, Matthew is going, there is a place of beauty and life beyond this lake, beyond this storm. And the echoes are quite clear and obvious. He has got you. No matter the storm, he has got you. There is something just round the corner that is full of life and hope. And powerfully, he is right there with you in the middle of this storm. So let's go through it a little more chronologically. The disciples were called to catch a break together. But Jesus sends them out together on this boat while he goes off to pray. Why? Well, it's obvious, isn't it, I think? When a storm hits us in life, we need community. If only two of the disciples were on that boat, where the introvert's disciples had gone off to have a little sleep off on a rock on the shore, when that storm hit, they wouldn't have survived. And the Bible, and John said it earlier actually, resonates from start to end about how important community is. In Genesis 2:20, Adam is lonely. There isn't a suitable helper. So Eve is made. When Jesus talks about his bride, it's the bride of Christ, the church. That's us. In Ephesians 5. And what is the church? What a wonderful way of illustrating when Corinthians talks about we are one body. Each of us needs everybody else, even the person that annoys the heck out of you, even the person who has hurt you. We need each other. And quite frankly, the head would be lousy without a neck. I don't know if you ever saw the film My Big Fat Greek Wedding, a long time ago. I love this. Yad will tell me off to say this, but I quite like it. The father keeps telling the whole family that he is the head of the house. And one day the mum turns to the daughter and she says, he may be the head, but I am the neck, and I can turn him whichever way I like. We need each other. We need to be in community. One of the most powerful examples from my own life is fairly recent. I was in my previous church for 17 years. So when then God says to move, I underestimated how much I would miss a family who had been through an awful lot with me. The ups and the downs in personal life, work life, family life. I had completely underestimated. It was really destabilizing. Because family and church family is vital. We have to be in this together. And in times of storm, even more so. You see, we need to be doing life together. And maybe I'm missing it, but I would say in LBC right now, we should be actively seeking to do it even more. And for me as an introvert, I hate saying that. Because I'm like, no. Eat together, pray together, worship together, laugh together, seek God for what is next together. I'm obviously aware of lots of other churches, and there are some that are called missional communities. Effectively, they're just churches, small churches that meet in people's homes. Very early church acts-like. And they have this doing life together thing down. And one of the things I really like is how they keep a connection throughout the week without it being that hard of work. Now, I don't know how you feel about things like WhatsApp. I mean, they have their pros and their cons, don't they? But there's one group who has a WhatsApp group, which I think is a brilliant use of this. They essentially will message each other on a daily basis. The people who lead it will send a word of wisdom or a word of encouragement or a worship song. And then if somebody in the community, something goes wrong in life, they message the community through WhatsApp. Then everybody's praying and sharing and being encouraging. I think it's just an amazing way to be doing it together without having to see people. It's my style of community. You've got to meet people as well, okay? I do absolutely believe that. But do you understand what I'm saying? Authentically doing life together. You see, I think it's crucial for us to move, as we move forward, that we're doing life together, not just Sundays, not just house groups, but properly in the week. And it's totally opposite to our culture of individualism. Totally. It's, you know, our culture is saying what we want is what counts. But the Bible says we must worship, pray, eat, do life, laugh together. It's fundamental to our DNA of being human for one and being an authentic church community for two. I like to think about what the disciples might have chatted about before the storm hit on that boat. I think that's part of Jesus' agenda in sending them out. As I said earlier, some of them are probably thinking, oh, let's just have a sleep. Others are going, what's going on? Others, where are we going? Others, oh, it's a bit chilly. I wish I'd brought an extra layer. That's life. There were probably disciples who got on each other's nerves, who'd hurt each other, but they were still on that boat together. Henry Ford, oh, I love this quote. I couldn't believe he said it. I was like, wow, you were a good guy. Well, I don't know, but he says, coming together is a beginning. Keeping together is progress. Working together is success. I am really chuffed to have found a fellow reader in our church. I am a snob when it comes to books. I like proper fiction, literary fiction. And I found John Picton as my fellow reader. And he often lends me books, gives me books. And one of the ones that he recently gave me, it's amazing. It's not Christian, right? It's a piece of fiction. And I found this quote in it. To love is to be in communion with the other. And to discover in the other the spark of God. just going to read that again. To love is to be in communion with the other and to discover in the other the spark of God. What a beautiful way to illustrate loving one another as we love ourselves. We have to do it in communion. And we have to find the spark of God, even in the people that do our heads in, and there will be plenty. We have to row this boat together. And so I challenge us in the next few weeks and make it a culture. Have a social, if that's your thing. Prepare a meal, if that's your thing. Have a coffee. Gather to pray. Arrange a day out. And can I just say, don't arrange a day out with people who are like you. So families with kids with families with kids. Community is all ages, everyone. We are not a proper community if we're just sending the youth off to the youth, the kids off with the kids, the 40s with the 40s, the 20s with the 20s. That's not community. Let's all go out together and help the people who are struggling to walk. Help the parents who are puttering their head out because the kids are going bonkers. That is community. And we must be doing it together. Jesus made the disciples, it says it in the Bible in verse 22, go off in that boat together. And if they hadn't been together, they couldn't have navigated that storm. And they would not have reached the beauty of Gennesaret on the other side. Next, keep focused on Jesus. I mean, this is obvious in this story, isn't it? Because Jesus goes up a mountain to pray on his own, to be with God, in verse 23. And then in verses 29 to 30, Peter walks on the water until he shifts his gaze. The thing to remember with this, really, is quite simple. Formula One drivers are trained to focus on where they want to go, as opposed to where they don't want to go. Because travelling at that fast speed, right, if they see something over here, they will hit it. They have to stay focused on where they want to go. Now, I constantly remind Jan of this, because Jan's concentration is shocking, and he's driving along, and I'm trying not to be a backseat driver, and he'll see something interesting, and I'm like, yeah, the car front has braked. And he's like, oh, yeah, okay, okay. Basically, don't be like Jan. He's great. He can reverse very well. Peter stayed on track when where he wanted to go was towards Jesus. We will stay on track individually in our personal walks, but as a congregation, as a family, we need to keep our eyes focused on him. He needs to be where we are wanting to go. And then the miraculous will happen, like it did with Peter. We can walk on water. What's interesting here, though, is that even when Peter takes his eyes off of Jesus, clocks the storm, the circumstance, and that overwhelms, he sinks, but who does he call out for? Lord, save me. That's also telling. We are human, okay? And whatever storm is buffeting our lives at the moment, okay, whether individually or as a church congregation together, we will get overwhelmed by circumstance. And we will sometimes feel like we're sinking. And Matthew was saying, even then, remember, call out to him. It's like you can't lose. Look at him, you walk a water, the miracle happens. Even if you sink and go, Lord, help, he picks you out. He'll give you a small rebuke, have more faith, mate, and put you back on the boat and stop the storm. In It's so easy to take our eyes off Jesus and so human. When, before Christmas, I had my burnout, I was so tired, I couldn't focus on anything, and I loved to read. And I'd read something and I couldn't take it in. And because I'm a big reader, Bible has always been a key part of my Christian journey. So I'd read the Bible and I'd be like, Lord, this isn't good. And sometimes, to be frank, my attitude wasn't great either. I'd be like, Lord, if you tell me one more time to trust and persevere, I'm going to begin to scream my head off, or something far worse. And I sat there thinking, I have to stay connected somehow. So I decided I'd read a short verse, bullet point it in my spiritual journal, and then come back to it at different points in the week. And even though it didn't feel like it was doing anything, it was. Because it was drip-feeding truth into a storm where my head is like this. Jesus, I can't look at you because I'm looking at this and this and this. But it's drip-feeding truth. And that is essential. The need to keep focused on Jesus and be in community is intrinsically important. And I may have got it wrong, but I do think so at this point in time. And if we focus on Jesus, we are moving in the right direction. John reminded me of Hebrews 12:2, where it talks about fixing your eyes on Jesus. Why did you fix your eyes on Jesus? Because he pioneered our faith. He perfected it. You see, the reality is if we take our eyes, if I take my eyes off Jesus, how can I follow him? How can I know where he's going? How can I know what his heart is? We have to keep focused, and that's sometimes tough. But I do want to give you another example here, because I was talking to Jan a bit about this in the week, and he reminded me of an elder in the church that we grew up in, who at one point had been really poorly. And he'd talked about how when he was poorly, he was not in a position to pray or read the word, really, because he was so sick. And Jan had asked him, well, then how did you keep your eyes focused on Jesus? And he said, it's in those moments that you know that others are praying. And for me, that highlights probably the point of, yes, we keep our eyes focused, but when the storm hits and we shift away, that's why community and family is absolutely essential. In personal storms, and all of us will have different ones, we need to keep focused, and obviously the spiritual disciplines are the keys to keeping focused on Jesus. Reading the Bible, praying, coming to church, doing life with a church family together. For me, listening to worship music helps. But whatever does it for you, work hard, even in the storm, of focusing on him. And even when you sink, call out for him, because he'll grab you and pull you up. Lastly, if you want to walk on water, you've got to get out the boat. Whatever the storm, there is always a challenge to get out of the boat. And when Jesus is the centre of that storm, and in the video, which was I think was helpful, the storm is raging and Jesus is there as calm as pie walking across this water. Nothing but the power of God was holding Jesus on that water. When Peter chose to get out, nothing but the power of God was holding him on that water. The incredible thing is that when we choose to step out, it's the power of God that will hold you. In the same book that I talked about earlier, it's not Christian, but fantastic, he says again, pitiful is the person who is afraid of taking risks. What have you done with the miracles that God has planted in your day. There were several disciples on that boat. Only one took the risk and got out. Of course, he took his focus on Jesus and sank. But nevertheless, he walked on water. You've probably heard a million times that, you know, in the valleys, in the storms, when things are tough, that is when we learn the most, when we grow the most. And there is often a challenge at the end of that. Peter took that challenge. He got out of the boat. And I think that when storms hit, we may be shattered and exhausted, absolutely. And God has got us in that, okay? But there is always a challenge to get out of that boat. And for each of us, that might be a different thing. For some of us, that might be forgiving someone. For some of us, it might be starting something, stopping something, changing something. But we have to get out of the boat if you want to walk on that water and for the miracle to happen. John Ortberg, he says about how getting to know God better is really the key thing. The more you get to know him, through spiritual disciplines, through him encountering you because you're giving him time to encounter you, you're getting to know him. Your gaze is being focused back on him. You're starting to trust him. And so the likelihood of getting out of that boat is more probable. We need to get out of the boat. And for each of us, that might be different, as I have said. And it depends on your storm. As a church community, I have no idea what it means for us as a group together, but we need to get out of the boat. Risks. I think you're going to hate this, okay? So I apologise before I say it. But I want us to end before communion by reflecting a little bit on those three points. We have to do life together. It's biblical. Really, authentically, when you're a nightmare, when you're crying all the time, when you're really angry, when you're swearing your head off because you've just dropped a hammer on your toe. Really. We have to keep our eyes focused on Jesus and we have to get out of the boat. So in a moment, we're going to watch another little video. And it's essentially Peter's journey. Snippets from his life. And after it's finished, a piece of music, which I think God has said I should use, will play. And in that section, there are pieces of paper on your chairs and some pens. We ran out of pens. I'd like you to be brave. I'd like you to write down on that piece of paper, just for you to know, what you think it is exactly you need to do to get out of that boat. And for each of us, it'll be different. Then fold it tight and then put your name on it. Now, don't panic, right? Then, this is what you'll hate, right? As a demonstration of, yes, Lord, I'm gonna. And I hate when churches do things like this. My heart is like thumping like a drum, right? But I know when God's making me do it. As an actual step of faith, get up from your seat, come to the cross. And we've got a box. Put your piece of paper in it. And when it's full, I will lock it. I'll give the key to John and I'll keep the box. They'll never be read by anyone. And then in a few months' time, I'm going to come back and give them back to you. It's a step of faith. It's a getting out of the boat. If nobody does it, don't worry. But I want to give you the chance, okay? And then I'll pray for you. I know some of you will hate it. If I was sat where you are, I'd be thinking, oh, bats. But you can't end a sermon where the last point is get out of the boat and not do something that's about taking a risk. I'm sorry. So I'm going to show you a video clip. Then we'll play the music. Spend some time with God, because I'll guarantee most of you will know instantly what your next step, what you're getting out of the boat is. And then as the music, you make me brave plays. If you can, come and put it in the box as a declaration to God about what you want to try and do. Father in heaven, you make us brave. You make us brave. You call us out beyond the shore into the waves. You make us brave. No fear can hinder us now, because your love has made the way. Father, we commit these promises to you, and we ask, Jesus, that you will help us be brave enough to do the thing that we have promised, Lord. And when it's hard, when we fail, to be reminded that you pick us up and put us back on solid ground, because you are a loving and good, good Father. Jesus, may we go into our week pledging to do these things to honour your name. And Father, as we go into communion and we remember why we want to do these things, why we want to honour you, that Father God, the power of your Spirit may fall and we meet with you. Pray this, Jesus, in your holy name.